Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Text 13 from Canto 4, Chapter 21. These are instructions by Maharaj Prithu. Ekadasin Mahasatra.
Ekadasin Mahasatra.
Diksha Tatra Devaukasam.
Diksha Tatra Devaukasam.
Samagjo Brahma. Brahmarshi Namcha.
Samagjo Brahmarshi Namcha.
Rajarshi Namcha Sattama.
Rajarshi Namcha Sattama.
Ekadasi Mahasatra.
Ekadasi Mahasatra.
Diksha Tatra Devaukasam. Samajo Brahmarshi Namcha.
Samajo Brahmarshi Namcha.
Rajarshi Namcha Sattama.
Rajarshi Namcha Sattama.
Ekada, Ekada.
Ekada.
Once upon a time.
Once upon a time.
Asit. Took a vow.
Mahasatra.
Mahasatra.
Great sacrifice.
Diksha.
Diksha.
Initiation.
Initiation.
Tatra.
Satra.
In that function.
In that function.
Devaukasam.
Devaukasam.
Of the demigods.
Of the demigods.
Samajaha.
Samajaha.
Assembly.
Assembly.
Brahma Rishinam.
Brahma Rishinam.
Of great saintly brahmanas.
Of great saintly brahmanas.
Ja. Also.
Also.
Raja Rishinam.
Raja Rishinam.
Of great saintly kings.
Of great saintly kings.
Ja. Also.
Also.
Sat Tamaha.
Sat Tamaha.
The greatest of devotees. Translation. Once upon a time, King Prithu initiated the performance of a very great sacrifice in which great saintly sages, brahmanas, demigods from higher planetary systems, and great saintly kings known as the Rajarshis all assembled together. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In this verse, the most significant point is that although King Prithu's residential quarters were in India between the river Ganges and the Jamuna, the demigods also participated in the great sacrifice he performed. This indicates that formerly the demigods used to come to this planet. Similarly, great personalities like Arjuna, Yudhisthira, and many others used to visit higher planetary systems. Thus, there was interplanetary communication via suitable airplanes and space vehicles. I'm going to read a few verses because they're connected. Text 14. In that great assembly, Maharaj Prithu, first of all, worshipped all the respectable visitors according to their respective positions. After this, he stood up in the midst of the assembly, and it appeared that the full moon had risen amongst the stars. Purport. According to the Vedic system, the reception of great exalted personalities as arranged by Prithu Maharaj in that great sacrificial arena is very important. The first procedure in receiving guests is to wash their feet, and it is learned from Vedic literature that one time when Maharaj Yudhisthira performed a Rajasuya Yajna, Krishna took charge of washing the feet of the visitors. Similarly, Maharaj Prithu also arranged for the proper reception of the demigods saintly sages, the brahmanas, and the great kings. Text 15. King Prithu's body was tall and sturdy, and his complexion was fair. His arms were full and broad, and his eyes as bright as the rising sun. His nose was straight, his face very beautiful, and his personality grave. His teeth were set beautifully in his smiling face. Purport. Among the four social orders, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, the Kshatriyas, both men and women, are generally very beautiful. As will be apparent from the following verses, it is to be concluded that not only were Maharaj Prithu's bodily features attractive, as described here, but he had specific all auspicious signs in his bodily construction. Paragraph, as it is said, quote, "The face is the index to the mind. One's mental constitution is exhibited by his facial features. The bodily features of a particular person are exhibited in accordance with his past deeds. For according to one's past deeds, his next bodily features, whether in human society, animal society, or demigod society, are determined. This is proof of transmigration of the soul through different types of bodies." Text 16. The chest of Maharaj Prithu was very broad. His waist was very thick. And his abdomen, wrinkled by lines of skin, resembled in construction a leaf of a banyan tree. His navel was coiled and deep. His thighs were of a golden hue, and his instep was arched. Text 17. Getting pretty detailed here. The black, slick hair on his head was fine and curly. His neck, like a conch shell, was decorated with auspicious lines. He wore a valuable dhoti, and there was a nice wrapper on the upper part of his body. As Maharaj Prithu was being initiated to perform the sacrifice, he had to leave aside his valuable dress, and therefore his natural bodily beauty was visible. It was very pleasing to see him put on a black deerskin and wear a ring of kusha grass on his finger, for this increased the natural beauty of his body. It appeared that Maharaj Prithu observed all the regular principles before he performed the sacrifice. Text 19. Just to encourage the members of the assembly and to enhance their pleasure, King Prithu glanced over them with eyes that seemed like stars in a sky wet with dew. He then spoke to them in a grave voice. Text 20. Maharaj Prithu's speech was very beautiful, full of metaphorical language, clearly understandable and very pleasing to hear. His words were all grave and certain. It appears that when he spoke, he expressed his personal realization of the Absolute Truth in order to benefit all who were present. A short purport. Maharaj Prithu was beautiful in his external bodily features, and his speech was also very glorious in all respects. His words, which were nicely composed in highly metaphorical ornamental language, were pleasing to hear and were not only mellow but also very clearly understandable and without doubt or ambiguity. So that's the warm up, and then tomorrow he's going to speak something. So from the last time I was here, there was the young king, which Lord Vishnu appeared, and then he returned back to his home or his palace. And now that he's back in his palace, he's addressing not only the citizens, but another major sacrifice function. That's this word, satra, maha satra. was arranging for a major sacrifice and invited a lot of guests, but it wasn't a party. It was a spiritual function. And starting with the first purport, Prabhupada is commenting. This Deva Okasam, last word, the second line, Deva Okasam is indicating the devas, plural. Many demigods were invited and they came. So the emphasis in one, in the purport, is there was interplanetary travel. But also it means that the person so qualified as to invite demigods and they come, it was not like it was something imaginary or sentiment or blind faith or something like that. But these very, very elevated persons had such qualifications that the demigods came. Now, why would the demigods want to come? They would want to come if there's qualified persons, just like the indication of Maharaj Yudhisthira and Arjuna. They were able to go, but also they were with great persons, put it this way, with great personalities, the personality of Godhead and his associates appear. Some of you may have been attending and may remember this discussion about Narottam Das Thakur. Remember we sang this song, Nittai Pada Kamala, and described the life of Narottam Das Thakur. And Narottam Das Thakur, and he held the first formal major Gaur Purnima festival in Katuri. And Srinivas Acharya was the presiding priest to install a number of deities. And the assembly of Vaishnavas that came was an awesome assembly. The list is described in Bhakti Ratnakar. And then as they began the kirtan, they felt such ecstasy that the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, one by one, who were already departed from this world, they also came and participated. And as each of the members of Lord Chaitanya's previously departed associates appeared and joined the kirtan, one can only imagine it was pretty uproarious. And more joined and more joined, and even Lord Chaitanya himself participated. And there's something similar that took place in Vrindavan. After Krishna's departure, the queens of Dwarka, they had heard so much about Vrindavan but had never been to Vrindavan, so they desired to go to Vrindavan. And the great grandson of Krishna, Vajranab, was requested. He was the king of Mathura and the district of Vrindavan. He was requested, please take us, please take us. So he took them to Vrindavan. And at the very place where Uddhava, the associate of Krishna, Uddhava, where he read the letter to the gopis from Krishna, and then seeing their ecstasy of love, not just when he was reading the letter, but in general, he desired to take birth as a blade of grass so that he could receive the mercy of the gopis by stepping on his head, because he felt if he asked for dust from their feet, they would be too embarrassed and feel bad, so he didn't want them to feel bad. He wanted the dust from their feet, so let me become a blade of grass in Vrindavan. So when Vajranab came with the queens, he recited Krishna's pastimes and glories, and they began spontaneously singing Krishna's names. And from singing Krishna's names, the ecstasy increased, and Narada Muni came. And with Narada Muni present, the kirtan became more ecstatic, and it continued to escalate and escalate. And even Uddhava, from his position of a living entity as a blade of grass, appeared and joined the kirtan. And the many, many, many associates of Krishna joined the kirtan. Those who had already parted, and Krishna had departed. So what to speak of departed souls? Even demigods, or those that haven't departed, become attracted by the quality of devotion. Sometimes it's asked, why is it that forms of the Lord, incarnations of the Lord, appear only in India? Is this like an ethnic thing or what? And the answer is, Krishna appears where there's devotion. It doesn't appear because it's an ethnic thing. And it's a great fortune to take one's birth in India, and that is to say, have the opportunity of being part of remembering Krishna in many persons' cases from infancy and childhood and throughout their life. Of course, God-conscious culture is rapidly deteriorating in favor of imitating the West. But culture nonetheless is still there. And the deepness of God consciousness or Krishna consciousness or spiritual consciousness has its richness in India, and thus the forms of the Lord appear there. So here, it's demigods. Prabhupada is focusing not just the brahmanas and the rishis and the rajarshis, the kings that were like rishis, saintly kings, but even the demigods came and participated. Why? Because of the qualification of devotion of Prithu Maharaj. So they came. It doesn't say how they received an invitation, text message maybe. Please come to our function. Put up a poster, demigods invited. However they came to know of the function, they came. And then the next is how Prithu very expertly received each of the guests. And this is a very important part of Krishna consciousness or Krishna conscious culture, because without Krishna conscious culture, how does it look? Somebody's Krishna conscious without Krishna conscious culture doesn't look right. They go together. It's not the culture is the essence of Krishna consciousness, but the essence of Krishna consciousness manifests Krishna conscious culture, and part of that is receiving guests. Even those that are not Krishna conscious are instructed in those learned in Vedic culture, have an understanding of receiving guests. So, a nice example from the first canto is Bhishma Dev. When so many great sages came, or Parikshit Maharaj, when great sages came, in Bhishma's case, he couldn't even move. He was lying on a bed of arrows. He was in enormous physical pain. But he nonetheless, even though he couldn't get up and do anything, by his kind words and indications the reception was done in such a nice way. Everyone is described, everyone is fully satisfied. This is culture. So those of you that live at home, when guests come to your home, a cultured Krishna conscious person receives guests. Prabhupada said so many times, it is said in Vedic culture that if an unexpected guest comes to your home, they are to be treated like Narayana has come to your home. Because who knows? Maybe it's Narayana. Or even if an enemy comes to your home, they should be treated in such a way that they feel no discomfort. The importance of receiving guests in one's home, or here at the temple, when guests come, we take the whole situation for granted. That's not so good. There should be a it's just culture. It's not like promoting the temple. It's just being civilized and cultured. It's part of being Krishna conscious. Receive people nicely. And when that's done nicely, the first thing that people walk in the door, or shortly thereafter, there's a happy, smiling, greeting person. We had a whole strategic planning product. They were using corporate language, a deliverable, where a welcome mat initiative was created so that temples that wish to have greeters to receive the guests that come, the whole manual to explain these are things that are nice and things that are important. We signed this to one devotee in New York. So what they did to find out, like experiment, they went to different organizations, churches and other places to see how they do it. And they were quite amazed that not only there was someone to receive them, but there was someone that saw them off, and then 2 days later they received a note in the mail, thank you for coming, please come again. And it, you know, it's a wow experience instead of taking it for granted. Get the idea. And you know, these were apparently not only organized but, you know, quite large. And there's this concern, when you get large, maybe you become less personal. In any case, receiving persons, the first canto of Bhagavatam has a number of such, deliberately, a number of such sections where the culture of how to receive, specifically how to receive a sadhu, but in this case it's saintly persons, sages and brahmanas and rishis and demigods. So according to one's position is the indication, they were received very nicely. And Prabhupada points out the washing of feet. When Krishna made all the arrangements and people would come from the Rajasuya Yagi, he volunteered and he did it. He washed everyone's feet as they came. Who can imagine what that was like? So next is a description of the bodily features of Prithu. In short, very beautiful, as were kings of the time, but he's, you know, special. He's a incarnation, Shaktivesha avatar, and his features were very, very pleasing. Just to see his countenance, his face, Prabhupada quotes this phrase, the phrase, face is the index to the mind. And so he appeared very happy and just seeing him made other people happy. So this is the quality of a pious person, what to speak of an incarnation of the Supreme Lord. In general, Prabhupada is commenting, this face is the index to the mind, is the result of one's, the configuration of the mind determines the configuration of the body. And so according to one's past guna and karma, it indicates your mindset, the impressions within the mind, and then the external manifestation. When we were attending our meeting just in Houston, there was a little section where Praharna from Toronto was describing what they're doing in Canada. She's very light-hearted and very pleasant person. And towards the end, there was a picture. And everyone was asking, who's that? It was Bhakti Mark Swami when he was a young man, wearing saffron cloth, but like, didn't exactly look the same. I mean, look closely. Oh, that's Bhakti Mark Swami's nose. So that's Bhakti Mark Swami. And then I later had a discussion with him. His parents moved from Holland just after World War II to Toronto, and they settled in Toronto, and he was born in Canada, and so they're European, as you know. So many people in America are from so many places, and so many people in Canada are from so many places. But, you know, direct first generation family. So in the course of living a life of devotion to Krishna, obviously certain bodily features stay the same, because you, whatever you want to say about why we get a particular body we get. But when someone becomes very, very elevated, like we find the description of our great acharyas, in many cases, in their childhood, their bodily features were exhibiting the signs of exalted persons. There are such studies or sciences of bodily features, and which ones are particularly auspicious, as described in Nectar Devotion to some degree. So Prithu Maharaj had them in full. It describes his chest, his waist, his abdomen, his navel, his thighs, his instep, his hair, his neck, his dhoti, the wrapper around his body, and then he's getting ready to participate in the yajna. So he accepts deer skin. This is a Satya Yuga thing. And the ring of kusha grass on his finger. He had performed all of the rituals prior to the yajna by scriptural direction and under the guidance of a brahmana. And then he enters into the assembly and he glances and smiles. But so it's not just a social thing. He's an empowered incarnation of the Supreme Lord. So that the satisfaction, it was for the satisfaction of all in attendance. And he appeared in this way. Then this last verse is his speech. His speech was very grave. The language that he chose was very metaphorical and light and clear. Now, metaphorical, there's a Sanskrit word, alankara. Alankara means literary ornaments. Alankarika just means ornaments, like dressing the deity with ornaments. But its more common meaning is the ornament of speech, where things like, in poetry, things like alliteration, the repeating of a consonant, I guess, it just happens. Madhuram Madhure B.O.P. Like that, this song that we sang. Mangale B.O.P. Mangalam. So, the repeating of a syllable or a consonant, or the metaphor and simile, they're categories of literary ornaments. The Bhagavatam is filled with it because it's such a beautiful literature. But his speech was like that also. And the emphasis is very clear. Everyone could understand exactly what his message was, and very deep and grave sounding. So part of the purpose of all this is to appreciate his features, but also to create the setting when he does begin to speak. It's a powerful experience even before he speaks. And the audience, largely it's the citizens and all these other personalities, he's going to impart transcendental knowledge. So let's hear what he has to say tomorrow morning. Any comments or discussion? Hare Krishna.
It looks like even Prithu, who is a Kshatriya, who is an exalted personality, can also perform the yajna.
He wasn't performing the yajna. He was the bulk. He was the, what's the word? The performer. In the sense of the one who was the sponsor of. I can't think of the right term.
Because it says he has a pusha grass on his hand.
Huh?
He has the pusha grass on his hand.
Well, that's the participant does that. The brahmana puts the pusha grass on the finger of the participant. It doesn't give an indication otherwise. That's a yes.
So they are so blessed.
Yes. Because of Prithu, they were blessed.
And then they could see.
It doesn't say specifically. You're asking the same question.
Okay.
And it's the same answer. It doesn't say otherwise. Honored them. It wasn't like running over there and they're wondering, what's he doing? There's no indication otherwise. We can assume they also saw. Okay? Something else? Yeah?
Hi, Krishna. I have a question not related to the current topic, but
great.
What is this regarding with chanting?
Regarding chanting?
Chanting, doing the sadhana. Trying to bring mind when it's running to bring back and have focus on it. It tries to scan all the memory which has like 20 years of memory that is pulling up now. It's not recollected since a long time. It's been doing multiple times.
Okay.
And then in the mind starts processing it and it takes 2-3 minutes to bring it back in.
So this is a confession or a question? What's your question? Why? Or what to do?
What to do.
And we all know what to do. You know what to do. From whatever and wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, what does Krishna say? bring the mind back under the control of the self. That's what you do. However many times it goes, you bring the mind back. It's like an animal on a leash. You've seen people going for a walk in the morning with their dogs. And the dog is running here and there, and they've got a leash. And he goes too far, and they pull the leash. So put a leash on your mind and bring it back. And then it goes, and it's like, you know, an untrained beast. Bring it back. However many times, continue to do that. And by practice, then the mind becomes disciplined, becomes trained. The wild animal becomes a trained animal. And then just by command. That's control of the mind. And the other is no control of the mind. Okay? Anything else? Yes.
Yes, I thought of a question. I was wondering, like, I remember you were saying how you know, making a distinction according to the gas and treating according to that distinction. Like, I was wondering, like, if that would be according to the Varna Ashram, make those distinctions. And then, but yet, say, one person doing more service, say, a person is higher than Varna Ashram, so we distinguish that person as more higher. But then another person may be lesser than Varna Ashram, but he may be doing more service. Well, okay,
I got your question. And there are many other variations on Vipramukhya. Used to be one of his like regular topics in Bhagavatam classes was listing the various ways in which seniority can be considered. They would list them. So it's not always there's a one-to-one match with the various considerations of seniority, and one should respect according to position of seniority. And it's not only it doesn't always match, and that meaning there's, like you gave this example, there's some conflicting situations, apparently. There's some overriding ones, like, you know, we worship Krishna first. That's where everything goes. In the case that you just described, somebody who has a greater position and then another person who is doing more service, depending upon the circumstance, we may commonly will particularly honor the person who is elder or by position senior, and the person who is just does lots and lots and lots of service, we won't normally honor them first, but we may give some special honor in a special, you know, arrangement, publicly or privately, to honor the person who is doing so much service. Jainanda is a nice example. Didn't so much have title, but boy, was he engaged in service and engaging others in service. And he was honored, although he didn't have a position. Just love to serve. And I'll just share this with you. One of the duties of someone who has a title is to extend appreciation, formal appreciation, to those that don't have title. Extend honor and appreciation to those that may not have a position of title at all. So, one of the things when I was serving in the executive committee of the GBC, we collectively arranged for letters of commendation sent to different devotees who didn't have titles but had done amazing service, without naming the names of who we sent it to. But, you know, just we thought of, okay, who should we send? Who should be recognized and honored for their service? So one of the persons we sent a letter to was the coordinator of PAMHO. That's what you know. PAMHO is. It's an internet server. There's a devotee, a European devotee, and then a counterpart Russian devotee that served the whole of ISKCON very quietly, very humbly. It's fantastic service that they do. So we made letters of commendation for them. First we find out their histories and just imagine how they felt. Mother Jamuna and Dina Tarani don't have a physician. We sent letters to them. And without, you know, it's just, it's an add-on to what your question is, but so it's not just physician, it's that, you know, the humble, dedicated, quiet servant is to be honored. That's culture. And so, but when there's a proceeding, like a public function, they may not be the first ones honored, because that stands more on formality. But both should be there, as part of culture. Anything else? Sujan, yes.
So this is a general question on that.
A which question?
General. About
a general question.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the qualified kings, they always channel
qualified things?
Qualified kings.
Kings.
They channel to all the Panjari, heavenly Panjari system. Right. Up to demi
not all kings go to other planets.
Whoever is qualified. They travel up to Brahma
Loka,
right?
Where are you going with this? What do you want? What's up?
So, but they can travel up to.
Doesn't say that. It says that there were some that were qualified and they could do that.
Yeah, but they won't be able to travel to the abode of Lord Shiravaksha Vishnu.
Some did. We have at least two examples, right? Devas Muni and Krishna and Arjuna went to the abode of Mahavishnu through the layers of the universe into the spiritual sky on a chariot. Must have been a cool chariot.
But nobody would go on to the abode of Kalpataksha Vishnu.
Come on.
No, because I never heard of that.
Well, in one sense, that they are one entity. Each of the three Vishnus are one entity, differently named and differently situated according to function, but one entity.
But anyway, he has his own abode, right?
He sure does.
Even demigods wouldn't go there, like they go.
I don't know about demigods going there or not. I'm sorry. I know, it was a curious question.
Question.
Yeah.
Where is this about?
Who's about?
This is about the
Garbhadakshay Vishnu? Okay. Did I see what you started? Another curiosity question. Okay, so before the universe is constructed, there's details described in Brahma Samhita where Garbhadakshay, skipping many things, Garbhadakshay Vishnu enters within the universe where it's just beginning to form layers or shell, and when he enters, because it's a sealed universe, it's very hot. And so he perspires. And then it cools down. And he fills up half of the universe with his perspiration, or the Garbhodak ocean. So he fills up half of the universe. That's his residence. Half of the universe is filled with the Garbhodak ocean, upon which Garbhodak Shai Vishnu is reclining on the bed of Anantashesh. And it's described when Brahma was born from the navel of Garbhodak Shai Vishnu, he was hearing the waves of the Garbhodak ocean. So he climbed down the stem to find where that lotus flower had come from, but he couldn't find the end of it because it was a normal kind of a stem. So his residential position is in the lower parts of the universe, not necessarily half of the universe, but the lower part of the universe, where he's lying on the Garbhodak ocean.
He's at the bottom.
At the bottom.
But
it's not
lower,
at the top.
But lower.
Huh?
The lower worlds.
No, below the lower worlds, because the lower worlds are above. You know, he generates Lord Brahma from a lotus growing from his navel. That lotus represents the samasti, the collective karma of all living entities within the universe. That's a lot of karma. That's a big lotus. And Lord Brahma appears on top, and then the construction of the universe is created from there. So then there's the lower, the middle, and the upper planetary systems. Those lower, middle, and upper planetary systems are within the stem of the lotus. It's a big stem. And the Garbhodak ocean is beneath where Garbhodak Shai Vishnu resides. And I can't draw a picture for you. I'm just describing in words what it says. I didn't get it. Say it again.
The rest of the world rests on Anantashesha's head from Pitriloka up.
Yeah, all the way. Not just Pitriloka. Yes. Not just Pitriloka up, it's all the planets. All the planets. I mean, whatever there are planets that they're resting on his hoods. I can't draw a picture for you. I can just describe what it says. Okay. Thank you very much, Prabhupada. Keep going.